Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Technology yesterday, manufacturing today. There are surprising signs of life in big chunks of the U.S. economy. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
This podcast is supported by FreshBooks, the easy professional online invoicing service made especially for small businesses. Learn more at FreshBooks.com.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It's Thursday today, everybody, the 21st of April. Good as always to have you with us. We opened yesterday with the strong showing tech companies have been putting on this earnings season. All the big names, from Apple to IBM, are making piles of money. Today, it's companies like Honeywell and United Technologies and General Electric with a 77% increase in quarterly profits today. After years of hearing about the demise of American industry, manufacturing, it seems, is having something of a renaissance. Marketplace's Stacey Vanek Smith has more on the turnaround.
Back in the 60s, a third of U.S. jobs were in manufacturing. These days, it's about 10%. But in recent months, manufacturing has boomed.
In the beginning of the recovery, manufacturing was one of the main sources of growth.
Bank of America economist Michelle Meyer says when the economy slows, manufacturing drops way off. And when things start to improve, it streaks ahead. In the first quarter, manufacturing grew four times faster than the rest of the economy.
There's a lot of pent-up demand for durable products, such as automobiles, electronics. Consumers cut back dramatically during the recession, and now they're looking to purchase them.
Also contributing to the bounce back? Demand for U.S. goods overseas. The dollar is weak, and China and India are growing fast. Still, what's good for the industry isn't necessarily good for the worker, says Harvard economist Kenneth Rogoff. He points out that even as manufacturing companies have boomed, they haven't restored all the jobs they shed during the recession.
The companies will continue to do pretty well, but I don't think this is the future of American jobs. Manufacturing is an area where we're innovative, but the production side is ever shrinking.
Rogoff says factory jobs will continue to migrate to countries where labor is cheaper. Take the iPad. Concept, design, and some high-margin parts are produced stateside. The rest is made in China. In New York, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
It's all over but the final exams for college seniors. Now it's on to getting a job and figuring out where to live, maybe how to start paying back those student loans. Also, signing up for insurance. University presidents and student body leaders are getting letters from the White House this week. They're being reminded that health care reform means you can sign up to stay on your parents' plan until you're 26. From the Marketplace Health Desk at WHYY in Philadelphia, Gregory Warner reports on the economics of those reminders.
Maybe they can slip it into the commencement address.
Graduation is not the end. It's the beginning. Do not follow the well-worn path in life. But do sign up for health insurance under your parents' plan. Thanks, Mom.
Before the health care reform law, people had to leave their parents' insurance after graduation. Aaron Smith is founder of the advocacy group Young Invincibles. He created a graduation toolkit to help today's seniors navigate their new rights. And it's dull vocabulary.
Information like what is a deductible, what are premiums, is valuable information for young people to know about, because they've never bought insurance before.
Insurance analysts say the outreach is working. Lots of young adults are signing up on their parents' plans. Still, people in their 20s are almost twice as likely as older adults to be uninsured.
I thought I was bulletproof when I was 18 or 20.
Martin Gaynor is professor of economics and health policy at Carnegie Mellon University. He says that changing this culture of invincibility is part of the economics of healthcare reform, because when today's graduates turn 26... they'll be legally required to buy insurance.
It will either have to be that people just don't want to break the law, or they already are accustomed to being part of health insurance. And for any insurance to work, you have to have everybody in the pool.
The more young, healthy people sign up, he says, the cheaper premiums will be for everybody. In other words, graduates, you are the future of healthcare reform. In Philadelphia, I'm Gregory Warner for Marketplace.
Wall Street ended its work week on an upswing. Traders have the day off tomorrow for Good Friday. We are going to be here, and we'll have the details when we do the numbers. McDonald's shares lost about 2% today. Profits were up. They beat expectations, but the company said food prices are going to keep on going up this year. Here's another bad omen for fast food. We're not digging into French fries like we used to. Marketplace's Jennifer Collins reports.
French fries have seen better days. The U.S. Potato Board says sales of frozen potatoes to restaurants are down about 6%. And just listen to this ad from the Idaho Potato Commission, calling in a superhero sales rep.
When potato sales are less than super, our heroes arrive to help save the day.
It's Kent Beasley wearing tights.
Harry Balzer tracks American eating habits for the NPD group.
Fries have lost their place within the lunch order.
He says during the downturn, customers really bought into the cheap a la carte menus pitched by many chains.
One way to save money on food is just don't buy everything. Buy just the thing you go there for. The main dish is always the thing you go there for.
And the other problem is fries have gotten a little boring, so says culinary consultant Andrew Hunter.
I think we're seeing an evolution in how we look at fast food.
Hunter says Americans are reaching for healthier options as sides. Salads, apple slices, snap peas. He says fries aren't dead. They may need to be reimagined. Maybe that's why you're seeing sweet potato fries everywhere. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
The box score from the Los Angeles Dodgers game last night was a nifty win. They beat the Braves 6-1 on 11 hits, no errors. But really, nobody was talking about the game. The buzz at the stadium and all over sports last night was about Major League Baseball taking control of the team from owner Frank McCourt.
It's just a matter of time before it happened.
I think it's a good thing. I think Frank McCourt was doing a good job with the Dodgers, and we need to find somebody who's going to take care of the Dodgers and their history.
Hopefully it will lower ticket prices and raise payroll.
After the death of an old for birth of a new, so we're going to rise up. We're going to get better.
That was Renee Cantu, Dave Serpa, Zach Forbes, and Anthony Gonzalez at the game last night. For some thoughts today, we've called Dave Zirin. He's the author of Bad Sports, How Owners Are Ruining the Games We Love. Dave, good to talk to you.
Hey, great to be here. Thank you.
The word that comes to mind when you think about the Dodgers and Frank McCourt is sort of Wall Street-y, actually. It's leverage. The guy borrowed $145 million to buy the team. He owes $430 million now. What was, though, the straw that broke the camel's back for Bud Selig, the commissioner of baseball?
Oh, I think the straw that broke the camel's back for Bud Selig was when Frank McCourt asked Fox Broadcasting, his broadcast partner, for a individual personal loan so he could make payroll. And this was after Frank McCourt asked Major League Baseball if he could take a business loan to make the payroll, and Major League Baseball said no. So then he did an end around and said, well, I want money for a personal loan, and then used it for payroll anyway. I think that was just a bridge too far for Bud Selig.
He's going to appoint a representative in the next couple of days, the commissioner is. What will that person have the power to do?
It's a very good question, because on the one hand, all the other owners are subsidizing this team.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, what do you do if this team is then competitive? If they go on a run and they need to add some parts here and there, will they have the freedom to do that, even though they effectively would be spending the other owners' money for the purposes of bettering their competitive advantage against other owners? So it's a very tricky situation in terms of what that person is going to be allowed to do. And the only thing we can know by looking at history and looking at other sports is that it will, in fact, be rife with conflict.
This whole episode has echoes of the financial crisis a little bit, with the Obama administration stepping in with General Motors and with TARP, and with this top-down sort of dictate from above, whether it's the government or the league, saying, listen, we know what's best. Here's what we're going to do. What happens now with the Dodgers?
Well, I think it is true to say that the Dodgers are too big to fail. they would fall under that rubric, certainly. But I think the other echo of the financial crisis here is not just seen with the Dodgers, but with all of Major League Baseball. The Texas Rangers, who made the World Series last year, had to be sold in the middle of last season in a bankruptcy auction. Let's remember that the New York Mets, whose fans are already wearing paper bags over their heads just 15 games into the season, are literally bankrupt because their owners leveraged their team towards Bernie Madoff. I mean, the problem really is, really mirrors the economic problems in the United States, because so much of baseball has been about real estate over the last 30 years. I mean, you're talking about over $30 billion that have been spent on either refurbishing or building brand new stadiums and parks, which owners then borrowed money on. Now, that was all fine and good when the economic climate was better and the real estate market was good. But now that the real estate market is cratered, you're seeing a lot of teams crater along with that market, as the values of the land and the values of the stadiums have actually plummeted.
What about the fans, though? They're kind of staying away this year. I mean, Dodgers season ticket sales are down. Baseball attendance is down.
Yeah, and it's a tragic thing, actually, because the Dodgers had the number one attendance mark for 12 straight years. And that's really changed. But that's a story across Major League Baseball. And I would argue that it's happened because Major League Baseball has ignored working class and middle class fans for a generation, because they haven't had to cater to those fans for the simple reason that they were making so much money from public subsidies, from sweetheart cable deals, and from luxury boxes. But now that those revenue streams are running dry, you really are seeing the chickens come home to roost.
Dave Zirin. He's a sports editor at The Nation magazine. His most recent book is called Bad Sports: How Owners Are Ruining the Games We Love. Dave, thanks a lot.
Oh, my privilege. Thank you.
Coming up, the sacred spaces, these places where you thought you'd once be able to go to have some alone time and some way time, are also now being filled with advertising and marketing.
Morgan Spurlock and his new movie. But first, let's do the numbers. Another solid day on Wall Street. The Dow Industrials rose 52 points, 0.4%, closed at 12,505. The NASDAQ added 17 points, nearly 2/3%, finished at 2820. The S&P 500 moved up 7 points, that's 0.5%. Ended things at 1337. Markets are closed tomorrow for Good Friday, as I mentioned. For this short week, the Dow and the S&P each gained 1.3%. The NASDAQ up about 2% or so. If Wednesday was tech's moment to shine, today was manufacturing. United Technologies, which makes everything from elevators to airplane engines, helped propel the Dow. Its shares thrusted up 1.4% today. Bond prices edged up as well. The yield on the 10-year T-note fell to 3.4%. And you are listening to Marketplace.
This podcast is brought to you by FreshBooks. For small business owners, FreshBooks is the online invoicing service to help you track time and expenses, create and send invoices, and receive payments. Accounts are free to manage up to 3 clients. To learn more, visit FreshBooks.com. If you missed the broadcast, you can still catch Marketplace. Go to our website and click on Podcasts. You'll also find our new podcasts, The Midday Update, Freakonomics, and The Tech Report, all at Marketplace.org.
From the Marketplace Statebook, here's a look at events coming up Friday. In Washington, the Labor Department reports on mass layoffs for March. That's when 50 or more workers from a single employer lose their jobs. It's quiet on Wall Street. Stock markets close in observance of Good Friday. And that should leave lots of time for Earth Day celebrations. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from APM American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdal. The year anniversary of the BP oil spill this week reminds us of a couple of uncomfortable realities. Drilling for oil is an inherently dirty business. It's hard to do, and it's getting harder. It's expensive. You throw in the squeeze the global economy feels when prices do what they're doing right now, and that's plenty reason to go looking for alternatives. And not just alternatives to oil as fuel, either. Marketplace's Sarah Gardner reports from the Sustainability Desk.
Chemical makers know that someday we'll run out of this miraculous goo called petroleum, but replacing it, that's not so easy. It's a key ingredient in almost every consumer product you can think of: diapers, pantyhose, prescription drugs, shampoos, lipsticks.
If a product hasn't been made with oil, it was certainly transported with oil. And without petroleum lubricants, the entire country would simply grind to a halt from friction.
David Fridley is a scientist at the Lawrence Berkeley National Lab.
It's more than an addiction. It truly is the essence of what we consider a modern world.
But industries are slowly beginning to come up with alternatives. In fact, you're probably using them and don't even know it.
Basically, we have our five washers here.
If you visit a biotech company called Novozymes, you'll find men doing laundry. That's because Novozymes makes industrial enzymes. These energetic little proteins have been used for years to make everything from beer to ethanol. Now, they're replacing some of the petrochemicals in laundry soap. So for Novozymes researcher Nathan Reese, doing laundry isn't a chore. It's a chemistry experiment.
To do a wash, we add our detergent, our enzymes, and then different swatches that have different stains on them. For example, maybe grass or cocoa or blood or something like that.
You can think of enzymes as nature's Pac-Man. They love to chew up fats and starches and proteins, says marketing manager Teresa Neal.
They do go after the stain, and they can find their way into the stain and basically change the chemistry of the stain, break it up, so then it can be lifted away from the clothes.
Neal, Reese, and their colleagues are based in the small town of Franklinton, North Carolina. But Novozymes is headquartered in Denmark, and it sells its enzymes to detergent makers all over the world. The company's slogan is Rethink Tomorrow. Neal says their customers are starting to do just that.
We've had a lot of growth, mainly because a lot of the manufacturers are looking for alternatives to petroleum-based ingredients. So we are seeing a very large increase in demand for our detergent enzymes.
Those enzymes are produced in industrial-sized fermentation tanks here. They're not a one-to-one replacement for the petrochemicals that foam up, clean, and dispense dirt and grime. But Neal says they can replace up to 50%. She says they can also strengthen those so-called natural detergents, the ones you might not trust with your kids' grass stains.
Furthermore, they can use at lower washing temperatures.
CEO Steen Risgaard is fluent in the science of laundry as well.
So that the consumers can save dollars on their energy bill.
Yep, it's enzymes behind all those new cold water detergents on the supermarket shelf. But there's a catch. Enzymes aren't cheap. Clorox's Greenworks brand is a Novozymes customer. Heidi Dorison, a marketing exec at Clorox, says Greenworks detergent costs about 10 to 20% more than the stuff with lots of petrochemicals. And Dorison says sales have been, well, lukewarm.
We launched Greenworks at the time that sustainability was really kicking into high gear. It was the time when Al Gore was doing his thing. We really felt this was going to transform cleaning.
Then the recession hit. That hurt Novozymes sales last year, too, but CEO Steen Risgaard told us business is bouncing back. Risgaard says the Cloroxes and Procter & Gambles of the world can't afford to abandon enzymes altogether because oil, he believes, will just keep getting pricier.
And eventually they'll have to pass that on to the consumers that will experience much higher prices for washing powders.
And for Risgaard, washing powder is just the beginning. His company is also betting big on enzymes to convert things like corn stalks into biofuels. These kind of petrol alternatives aren't necessarily some Scandinavian soap bubble of an idea. DuPont, one of the biggest chemical companies in the world, just bought Novozymes' chief competitor. In Franklinton, North Carolina, I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
On this fine spring day in New Orleans, we have many things to celebrate, but the anniversary of the BP Deepwater Horizon explosion is not one of them.
Commentator and chef Susan Spicer.
Most New Orleans hotels and restaurants are full and bustling with locals and tourists from the French Quarter Festival and the upcoming ever-popular Jazz and Heritage Fest. But things are all too quiet on the Gulf Coast. Remnants of oil and dead animals are still washing up on shore, and generations-old seafood businesses are closing their doors. Many of the oyster fishermen are saying it will be 6 to 10 years before they're producing at their normal levels. Most can't afford to wait that long. I'm one of the lucky ones. My business partner and I filed a class action suit against BP, not knowing what the future would be for the restaurant we had put 20 years of hard work into. As it turns out, 2010 was a pretty good year for Bayona, and we've since decided to take a back seat in the legal proceedings. The claims process for those hardest hit has been confusing and painful for most, while a small percentage have received satisfaction. We're confident that the fish and shellfish we're serving and eating today is clean and safe. That's because of the rigorous testing of Gulf seafood by local and national scientific agencies. But how future production will be affected remains the biggest unanswered question. I remember feeling the same push-pull after Katrina when people asked me how things were going. I wanted to put on a happy face and say how great everything was and how quickly we were recovering, but I was still frustrated and angry with the slow progress, the lackadaisical government response, and the overwhelming feelings of loss. This is a similar situation. I'm proud of our resiliency, but still want people to be held accountable. I want to know that the rest of the country won't forget what happened in their Gulf of Mexico. But hey, it's springtime in New Orleans, the magnolias are blooming, crawfish are in season, and my optimism is getting the upper hand.
Susan Spicer is the chef and owner at Biona Restaurant in New Orleans. You can send us your thoughts. You write to us at marketplace.org. Click on that link that says contact. Morgan Spurlock's new movie opens tomorrow. This one doesn't involve him eating McDonald's three meals a day for a month like his last one, Super Size Me, did. But he definitely takes on corporate America again, all of it. The film is called, and this is the official title, Palm Wonderful Presents the Greatest Movie Ever Sold. Morgan Spurlock, good to have you with us.
Thank you.
This is kind of a tough one to wrap your head around, this film. So do me a favor, and everybody else out there,
sure,
give us the elevator pitch.
Palm Wonderful Presents, The Greatest Movie Ever Sold, is a film all about the world of product placement, marketing, and advertising. And the whole film is actually paid for and made possible by product placement, marketing, and advertising.
There are so many layers of chicken and egg and meta meanings and everything in this film. I almost don't even know where to start.
Right.
How about we start here? Why?
I think that we live in a world today where you can't leave your house, you can't do anything without somebody trying to market something to you, without somebody trying to sell you something. And, you know, that continues to creep into our entertainment even more and more today. So I thought this was a good film at the right time.
Can't be, though, that you think ads are bad. I mean,
I think that, you know, ads make things happen. I think that ultimately television as a medium was created as a way to get people to buy these things, as was radio. These whole things came about to buy this stuff. And the people who wrote the TV shows in the beginning, the people who wrote radio shows in the beginning, were copywriters from advertising agencies.
But it's transparency, right? I mean, you want people to know.
It's not like I want circles and arrows and things going bing, 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 look, a soda, you know, it's because I think that would be even worse. But what I think the film does a great job of doing is bringing an incredible level of awareness to how this business functions and operates, you know, not only on television and film, but, you know, outside and advertising at large.
This is radio, so it's a little tough to give people the pure visual impression of you. But you have on a suit, which is an otherwise fine gray suit.
It's a
suit.
Ted Baker, greatest suit you'll ever wear.
But JetBlue is prominently displayed on your left chest. And then there's Old Navy. And I mean, you're a walking, talking brand.
I am wearing my NASCAR prom suit. Like if Jeff Gordon was going to the prom, this is what he'd be wearing.
The cynic in me says, man, that's a great piece of marketing.
I completely agree. I think it's a great piece of marketing that's a great conversation piece for the film as we start to talk about, you know, what is for sale. Is there a price you can put on everything?
How hard was it to get these companies on board? I mean, you, I guess, were doing a lot of cold calling.
A lot of cold calling. It took months. Like first, you know, so when you have an idea like this, who are you going to call first? Well, first, we're going to call the advertising agencies. These are the people with the keys to the kingdom. They know all the brands. They have all the ties, all the links in the chain. And so I call them first. And not one advertising agency, with the exception of Kirschenbaum and Bond in New York, would have anything to do with this movie.
Yeah.
And that's only because I'd known those guys for, you know, probably 6-7 years.
Let me get down to some of the details of the machinations of this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just because its name is above the title, let's talk about Palm Wonderful. Do they have—
It is the greatest antioxidant you'll ever drink.
Yes, of course it is. Now it's interesting you mention that because you are, in effect, a spokesman for them through this film, right?
In essence, I am. Yes, I am tied to this brand.
And did they get natural fruit drink brand exclusivity?
They got beverage exclusivity.
Beverage. Ooh, so they went the whole smash.
So they got all beverage. So there's no coffee sponsors, no water sponsors. There's no other juice sponsor, no soda sponsors, no colas.
Are the companies that supported you in this film getting their money's worth?
Yes. I will honestly say yes. You know, one of the benchmarks, because Palm, you know, with the above the title sponsorship, pays $1 million,
right?
Of which they've only given us $600,000. The other $400,000 is tied to certain achievements.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And one of those achievements is media impressions. Like, we have to get 600 million media impressions to get one more step on the, you know, of the money.
I'm glad I could help you out.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. The film coming out of the Sundance Film Festival, just the Sundance Film Festival, you know, for that 2 weeks, garnered 900 million media impressions.
Oh.
So there you go. So now that benchmark's done. So now there's the other things we still have to accomplish, like $10 million at the box office, 250 screens worldwide, 500,000 downloads and DVDs to get the rest of the money.
Did you call McDonald's?
Of course I did. The idea was to make a documentary blockbuster. We wanted to make a docbuster. So I called McDonald's.
Yeah.
Didn't call back. Big surprise. I called him like four or five times. You know, it's like I'm leaving a message.
Hi, Morgan again.
I'm like, hey, it's Morgan Spurlock again. You may remember me from such films as. But this is a different movie, completely different, kinder, gentler Morgan Spurlock calling.
The latest movie from Morgan Spurlock is called Palm Wonderful Presents the Greatest Movie Ever Sold. Thanks a lot for coming in.
Thank you.
Believe me when I tell you, you got to see that suit to really appreciate it. There are some pictures on our website. Also, a trailer from the movie. It's marketplace.org.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
This final note today, picking up where Stacy left off earlier about American manufacturing coming back. Seems Kohler, the bathroom fixture people, have a new product out. For $6,400, you can get a commode that has feet warmers and a heated seat. If you have shy kidneys, it offers the gentle sound of rushing water to help you out and soothing piano music. For households where this is a problem, embarrassingly mine sometimes, it's got an automatic seat lowerer, also a port for your iPod. Not making any of this up, by the way. All right, that's Marketplace from APM, American Public Media. Today, the Dow rose 52 points, about 0.4%. The NASDAQ added 17 points, nearly 2/3%. The S&P 500 moved up 7 points, about 0.5%. Wall Street's closed tomorrow, remember. Ben Adair, John Buckley, Nancy Fargali, Stephen Gregory, John Haas, Jonathan Karp, Betsy Streisand, and Lisa Tucker are the Marketplace editing staff. The managing editor is George Judson. Thanks today to the German Marshall Fund for support of our BP coverage. And coming up next time back here, short stories about our daily work beyond just 9 to 5.
Fiction's good at immersing you in the details which the headline don't convey.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Hope you can join us for that tomorrow. This is APM, American Public Media.